Hey, everybody, and welcome to EdSoul, a podcast for educators by educators. Each episode, we bring you insights, techniques, and strategies rooted in research that you can put into practice in your classroom right away. I'm your host, Rachel Logan. Hello, soulmates. We are thrilled to bring you this bonus episode highlighting one of our 2024 Sourcewell Educator Summit breakout speakers, Luke Greiner. Welcome to EdSoul, Luke.
Hey, thank you, Rachel. It's my pleasure to be here.
Let me introduce you to him. Luke is from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED. He is a regional analyst for Central and Southwestern Minnesota. Luke conducts research, writes publications, and provides presentations about Greater Minnesota's economy, job market, industry trends, career and educational decision-making, and higher education outcomes. And so today we are going to be picking his brain a little bit about employment trends and how we can best prepare students for the workforce. And just a reminder, if you have not registered your school team, or if you have not signed up for our Educator Summit yet, that is this August, you're going to want to look for that registration link in our show notes so you can come and hear Luke present in person and ask him all the questions that you may have for yourself. So anything else you want to add to that introduction, Luke, before we jump into some of our questions for today?
No, I look forward to seeing everyone at the summit, and I hope we get to have some fun connections.
Perfect. All right. Well, we always like to start on EdSoul by asking folks what makes them personally connected to the work that you do. So you are a regional analyst. What makes you connected to that work? What is your why?
Yeah, so I ended up in this job kind of by happenstance, maybe sheer luck, just divine blessings, you name it. You know, I don't think I really probably deserved it. It wasn't necessarily a path that I had carved out when I was young and worked my whole life to get here. And I feel truly blessed because this is a really good fit for what I enjoy. And I'm naturally just analytical, and I happen to find myself in an analytics role. But I also don't really enjoy being stuck behind a computer screen, you know, 8 hours a day. So
sure.
This position gives me the opportunity to have both of that. And, you know, specifically on the topic of education, I'm probably passionate about it because this position and the data that I get to use and the analysis I get to provide really kind of uncovers all the way that I did it all wrong. Mm-hmm. I knew I did it all wrong, but I didn't quite really know what I should have been doing. You know, my higher education experience was I would say an absolute train wreck. And unfortunately, I don't think I was alone. And I think there's still a lot of students that find themselves in similar shoes as mine. So, yeah.
So what do you mean by you did it all wrong? What do you mean by that?
Oh man. So I chose and changed and, you know, colleges and majors. And a lot of my problem was that I didn't quite understand what I was getting myself into. And then I would find a bit of information somewhere along the line where I would actually be acquainted with what it was that I was being prepared for.
Yeah.
And then it would typically turn me off. And I'd think, no way do I want to do that.
Sure.
You know? So, yeah.
And you
I would say.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I would say I floundered through higher education mainly because I had to keep changing so many times.
Yeah. I think a lot of people can relate to that that story. And I was just thinking, yeah, you probably weren't reading, you know, in school, in your community helper's book about employment and economic development, you know, as like, what do I want to do? And how do I match my skills to my interest areas? That probably didn't show up in your community helper book.
No, it's funny. Actually, growing up, I knew we had a counselor in our school. I graduated from a very small rural school in Stevens County. But I actually didn't know back then that counselors were also tasked with like career guidance. I just saw them tend to behavioral issues and things like that.
Sure.
And honestly, the only career information I ever received was from a science teacher. Some biology class. And I remember, you know, we'd kind of gotten our work done and he threw one of those, like back in the day, my department, my office would publish these Minnesota Careers books and we don't do it anymore. And it took me some digging to figure out, oh, that's crazy. Now I actually work for the organization that made that book.
Yeah.
But he threw it on the table one day and he's like, hey guys, why don't you guys figure out what the heck you're going to do with the rest of your lives? And I was like, oh, I mean, a childhood dream of mine was joining the military, and I did that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't really have a good plan for after that. I just kind of thought I'd come back and farm because my family farms. But it just didn't work out, and I really didn't have a good plan B. So that's where I found myself kind of wading through higher education and making a lot of changes, and that prolonged my graduation and all that. And so fast forward to getting into this job, and maybe the second year after I started, we started producing graduate employment outcomes where you can actually see all these levels of information about college graduates and kind of connecting what you're studying to the labor market. And yeah. I thought, this is gold. This is what was missing. I would love to blame it on that we didn't have it at the time, but you know, I'm definitely responsible for my own erratic path.
Well, you're kind of moving right into this next first question about, you know, this is a show geared towards education and educators. So how does working as a regional analyst connect to our regional educator listeners?
So my office produces basically all the economic data for the state and kind of on behalf or in partnership with the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So we produce the unemployment rate, the wage and salary data, the monthly jobs report, you know, the press release, we write that in my office. And, you know, it's a lot of econ heavy topics and data sets, right? But from my perspective, there's probably no better use of all that LMI we create than to help guide and align our education system and the people going through it. We don't have a labor force that's growing as fast as we used to. And, you know, I think for better, it makes people that much more important. We have a labor scarcity where, you know, for generations prior, we had a job scarcity where there was many people fighting over a scarce amount of jobs. And now we have a lot of job openings and few people fighting for them because everybody is basically working. Mm. And that means that we can't afford to really do what we've been doing. And I think this is a really good direction that we're moving with economic development to think more about people and community development and workforce development as being kind of a pillar of economic development. Because we really don't need any more job openings. We can't fill the job openings we already have.
Yeah.
What we need is the right people. So it has like this, to me, it's just this beautiful relationship of outcomes where if people can use this information to make better decisions, it's better for students, mm-hmm. right? Because that is our next generation of workers.
Mm-hmm.
It's better for businesses if you don't have people, you know, getting into a job that they don't really like, and then maybe they stay in it for a long time and they don't like it, their boss doesn't like them, they're unhappy, you know, like that's just not good. We want people to find their best fit.
Right.
And it's good for educators because this is really, really difficult stuff. I mean, I live in this type of data, but it's not easy to put together or understand. My goal is always to try to package this information for students, parents, teachers, because they're the ones that are actually influencing these students, you know, adult or young, for that matter.
Right. So, well, I feel like this will just kind of layer onto the conversation we've started here. In September of 2023, you and your team put out an article called Popular or Pragmatic, part two of the long view, where you were analyzing items kind of like we talked about, such as instructional programs, earning potential, wages, cost of living, debt for graduates over time. Can you share a little bit some highlights of that article and study, and then maybe what was surprising that you found, or possibly what was affirming, like, yep, that's kind of what we thought was happening?
Yeah. So this was a part two. We did the first one, or I did it. I think it was in 2020. So to be honest, it didn't get a lot of attention because there was some other stuff going on.
Some other things happening.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it takes a while to put these together. And I think I maybe started on it before the pandemic started. But anyways, the whole idea was to help students kind of prospective students to think about the relationship between what I choose as a major and what happens after I successfully graduate from college, you know, either with a certificate, associate degree, bachelor degree, or graduate degree. And because to be honest, that information is not easy to put together. Mm. It doesn't matter if you're savvy or technically advanced. I mean, you have to dig and you have to put together multiple data sets for each person, right? I mean, I just don't think it's reasonable to expect people to do that, to figure out amortization of college debt and expected earnings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we've been publishing these employment outcomes for graduates for a decade at this point. And it's great information. We have even more detailed information, but kind of the goal is to keep iterating dashboards and articles and trying to see what hits, what is actually accessible, what will people access, what will people use, mm-hmm. You know, because that's kind of the name of the game. So the part two version, the feedback that I got from the original article was that, you know, we wanted to look further out from college graduation. So I think the first version looked at 2 years after college graduation. This one looks at 7 years after college graduation. So we had Alessia, our colleague, she did just a bang up job kind of putting this data together for us. And Carson and I kind of handled the article portion. And what it really looks at is like what, you know, what are your earnings? What are the median earnings of graduates from Minnesota out of private, public, you know, nonprofit, doesn't matter, like all the institutions that we have. What are their earnings 7 years after completing college at the median? So this is data that's not necessarily, well, it isn't survey-derived data, which makes it very special because it's highly accurate. It's based on, you know, unemployment insurance tax records. So it's just as good as it gets.
So with a survey, so it could be...
Whoa. Yeah, you run into definite issues with surveys. And if anybody's ever worked on... like follow-up surveys or accreditation surveys for higher education, they know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
You know, you end up with a real obvious bias where, you know, okay. The people that will respond to your survey are doing really well, and all the college graduates that aren't doing really well are just much less likely to respond. So
got it. Okay. Thanks for that clarification.
Yeah. Yeah, so this, you know, we get to basically capture everybody's wages except for folks that are self-employed, working for certain segments of the federal government, the military, or if they've left the state.
Okay.
But yeah, it does capture, you know, a good amount. And then we combined, you know, that earnings, the median earnings by major 7 years after graduation with what did it actually, you know, what does it typically cost to get that degree? And we couldn't do it for each program, but we did it for each, you know, degree level. And then we also added on the layer of what does it actually cost to live in Minnesota?
Mm-hmm.
So then you can kind of start to look at, you know, what's left over at the end of the day after mm-hmm. I have what I have, what I can make based on my major that I picked and graduated from successfully, minus what it costs to live, like a very basic needs life. And then, you know, subtracting out also what a typical student loan payment would be. And, you know, the surprising things for me, and I shouldn't say it's surprising to me anymore. It's surprising to me how few people probably grasp the huge variation in outcomes. And I see this really through the lens of students. A lot of students just don't quite understand the nuance between choosing a major.
Mm.
That matters so much more than how long you go to college for.
Okay.
And yeah, you know, major matters. That's kind of our thing. That's what we say. Like, and it's just really important.
Hopping around and starting and stopping and choosing, like we talked about before.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, this is only one part of the equation. That's kind of also the deal, right? So we can't measure how many smiles you get throughout the day or how fulfilled you feel when you come home.
Right, right.
That's not where we operate.
Yep.
But
what makes me think, I don't know if this connects to the conversation or not, so you just tell me if I'm way off base here. But it makes me think of this conversation I was having with a colleague of mine a few years ago, and he was talking about his child going off to college and wanting to be a teacher. And he was like, well, you better not go to this school that's going to cost this amount of money if your salary is only going to be this amount of money. That makes no sense. You should go to a different school that doesn't cost as much and get your teaching degree there. Does that connect to what you're
Bingo.
Saying at all? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I talk to students or faculty or anybody in this space, and I try to talk about this a lot because I think everybody should be talking about this more. And then, yeah. I think students would just get more and better information, but that's just it. You know, like I always tell people, you're going to see outcomes on here. You know, it is surprising, you know, to see bachelor degree programs. We're at the median. So, I mean, half of these students that graduated make, you know, they have net negative wages 7 years after graduation. You know, that's always surprising to me. Yeah. But I always tell people like, this is power, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would never try to talk a student out of majoring in one of these programs that has really dismal financial outcomes, but I would certainly encourage them to think about how that informs their financing of college.
Mm-hmm.
How does that change their passion of it? You know, I think it's easier to identify your passion. I'm passionate about history.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's one part of the equation. The other part of the equation is, how much is it going to cost and how much am I going to earn
mm-hmm.
if I pursue this passion?
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, people will decide, okay, now I know maybe I'll rearrange my life expectations to make this work. And in other cases, they might think, you know, I could maybe just keep that as a hobby. I'm not that
right.
passionate about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's what, now I'm also channeling my financial advisor, who I remember him saying, like, no more going back to school. You're done. If you want to learn, you can go to the library and like check out some books, but like you do not need to keep racking up, you know, like all of these different degrees and things if it's not going to equal, I don't know, maybe that's a controversial thing to say. I'm not sure. But the idea coming from his financial lens was, if you enjoy learning, there are other ways to continue being a lifelong learner that doesn't equal racking up school debt.
I know. That's, I probably don't get looked at in a very positive light, but, you know, when people ask me my alma mater, I just tell them YouTube University. I mean, we live in an era where, like, we have more access to information than any other time in history, and it keeps increasing. Mm-hmm. So, like you say, I mean, you don't have to be paying to learn. Like, it's the best time in the world, history of the world, to learn for free.
So how might a teacher or a guidance counselor use this information when it comes to thinking about what kind of course offerings they have, or if they're going to offer a certificate that comes, you know, they can graduate with a certificate, or, you know, even just kind of like we're talking about, some solid advice on personal financing, or, you know, especially if you maybe haven't had successful models in your own life about how to navigate college choices, managing debt, cost of living, all of those things that we're talking about. Because if I go back to that conversation with my colleague when he was having this conversation with his son about making a choice, I was like, huh? Like, that was like new information to me. Like, wait a minute, I could have been a teacher with less debt if I just would have made a, you know, it seems obvious, but I mean, like, I was really leading with my heart and also family tradition and, you know, some of those things that that were guiding forces. And I don't regret my choices, but I also probably had some missing pieces to the puzzle. Like you're saying, like, this is information to access to help you make an informed or more informed decision is kind of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and, you know, really something that I've kind of thought about through the article and just through, I mean, I've been talking about this stuff for quite a while now, but, you know, when I talk to students and I ask them about the cost of college, it's interesting to me, you know, most students, I guess it kind of depends on the age, but I typically am talking to sophomores, juniors, and seniors. For the most part, they don't really have a good concept of money or like the relative value of money. So when you, and this actually extends up into college. I know there's an Ivy League college in the East Coast that asks their students, their grad, you know, they're about to graduate, and they asked them, you know, what are your expected earnings? And I think like their median answer was like $800,000+ a year. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, when your expectation is earning that amount, you might not be making the best personal financial decisions, right?
Yeah.
But anyways, you know, students are, they're scared to death of college costs too. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about it as adults all the time because it weighs heavily on a lot of adults that are still paying, worried about the next generation. It's in the headlines, you know, and so this is manifesting in these students. Unfortunately, I think they need to be absolutely aware of the cost of college, but college, the cost of college shouldn't be any scarier than a mortgage, in my opinion. But think of the fail safes and financial advice that's actually probably really insightful you get from a huge variety of people that have gone through the experience. You practice being conservative, you know, and it's amazing. I mean, I don't know anybody that would tell, like, I don't know anybody whose advice when you buy a home would be, get pre-approved, see how much you can get pre-approved for, and then, you know, you make sure you get as much of that as possible because the more the better, right? Because I don't know if you've been pre-approved for a mortgage, but like, it's like, holy smokes, all of a sudden I feel rich, but wait
a minute. Whoa, should I take all of that? Probably not.
Yeah, it's like, you're basically like one, you know, blown tire away from bankruptcy because they're not looking at any of the cost. But, you know, for years, we've kind of turned around and given that same ridiculous advice to students in their higher education pursuits. Go to as much college as you can, the more the better, without really even thinking or considering that future unintended consequence and cost burden, how that might impact their ability to buy a home, get married, start a family, move, you know, just even mobility, which can help your career. You know, so, yeah, that's, it's challenging for a student to grasp that. And I'm not an expert at, I can tell you a lot of ways not to do this with students because I'm, I feel like I've failed more than succeeded in helping students understand this. But like, these are all the conversations that, you know, the things people look back and say, I wish I would have known.
Right.
And my hope is that, you know, teachers and parents, administrators can look at these type of data, you know, even just glancing at the article, you can see, like, holy smokes, like if I'm just blindly telling students, hey, you know, go get a bachelor's degree, go get a bachelor's degree, go get a bachelor's degree without even paying attention to their individual wants, desires, or expectations, you know, you're going to have winners and you're going to have losers, unfortunately. And this is far too important to just leave up to chance, you know, and it doesn't have to be.
Well, even that example that you gave, you know, just a little bit ago about looking at the cost plus what you would be making plus cost of living, like that sounds like a great classroom unit project, you know, like in a finance class or in a business class or something, like let's do this, but make it real world applicable. About, you know, let's take the data that your team puts out, let's plug in some of our choices, and let's play with some of these ideas so that students and families can make the best, most informed decision. That, and you've got all of that information available, right? Is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And think of how nuts the situation is where you have, you know, or half the students enrolling in higher education and making decisions about it. You know, so like this is the probably the second most expensive decision they'll make in their life aside from, you know, buying a house. And think of, like, I mean, they're kids, you know, for the, unless you're a non-traditional student, like these are high school students.
Yeah.
And then we're, we're asking them to make this huge decision that can follow them the rest of their life, and then not help them, you know, not really provide a lot of the tools to give them knowledge to make a wise decision. And then at the same time, you know, like we'll sit back and complain that, oh, these kids, they want to have all this, you know, they need to make all this money. And I think, my gosh, they probably do need to make a ridiculous amount of money, potentially just to cover their expenses.
Right, right. So this is a question go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, what I always try to explain to students, because, you know, depending on how old their parent is, I guess, but like going to college is just different now than it was when my parents could go to college. Because back then you could show up and figure it out the first couple years, and that was okay. Like college took you in. It was good at, you know, having that first 2 years to kind of figure out where you want to go, graduate, say from university, your third and fourth year, and graduate on time. Everything's hunky-dory. Plus it was cheaper, right? Mm-hmm. And now to have any chance of graduating on time, you know, 4 years, you have to have your prereqs done in high school. You got to be showing up, you know, leaps and bounds further ahead than our parents were. And if you don't graduate on time, that extra time is extra cost. And that extra cost decreases the odds of your, you know, completion even. So we're kind of stacking the deck in the wrong direction, making it more expensive and potentially longer, you know, and then also trying to, you know, push these really important decisions earlier and earlier, you know? So think about that. Like these prereqs, they might need to be started in 10th grade, which means you have to have some sort of an idea before that. I don't know if it's necessarily reasonable, but I do know it's going to be impossible without a lot more teachers talking about this much younger and more often, you know?
Yeah.
We can't rely just on our counselors. That I do know, because we don't have enough. And, you know, if you're a music teacher and you're passionate about music, like this is great information to know. Like you can help students realize their passion and not regret it, right? You know, financially.
Gosh, and we wonder why kids are stressed out. Like
I kind of get stressed out thinking about
it. That's what I'm like. I'm stressed out thinking about prerequisites and having to know your plan by a sophomore year. So I was going to ask you a question, though, that's not on my list. And so, you know, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how popular it is still, but I know for a while there it was very popular to take a gap year in between. What are your thoughts on that? And I think the gap year could be very different depending on the individual. Some might be working, some might be traveling, you know. But it was kind of with this idea of like, if I don't know what I want to do, then I'm not going to rush into something. I'm going to take a year to figure it out. Do you have thoughts on that or data?
You know, so with respect to everybody is different. And for some people, a gap year means they just get totally derailed or, you know, end up a beach bum or something like that, right? I mean, that happens, but they're probably going to end up there anyways. I think gap years are an excellent choice if you don't know what you want to do. I mean, college is not designed to be a career exploration activity.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's an expensive one.
And I think a gap, oh my gosh. Yeah, it's not set up for it either,
yeah,
right? It's it's not only costly, but it's not really effective either. Because a lot of times you don't really get into the nitty gritty of what you're pursuing until the very end of your college experience. So, you know, for a gap year, my advice, like I would never be afraid of my own kids taking a gap year or just joining the labor force or anything, but like just be intentional about it. Mm-hmm. So don't just say, I don't know what I'm going to do, and then not think about what you want to do next for a whole year and then face that same decision. Oh, I guess I didn't learn anything, you know, like
I just hung out for a year and nothing's changed.
Right. If, you know, if you're interested in getting into, you know, healthcare or manufacturing or something like that, like, well, that's a perfect opportunity to actually try to get some experience in that area. And think of all, you know, we classify over 800 different occupations. I can't list them off, all of them. Students, they're not going to be able to know all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not reasonable.
Right.
The best way you learn about them is by seeing, talking to people that do them. And if you want to be an engineer or something like that, like, what better place to get insightful information about that than talking to somebody that does that or you know, even if you were doing material moving and stuff like that at a manufacturer, like you still get to see all the moving bits and pieces of manufacturing that might lead you in a different direction, a better direction, not at all into that, you know, but that's the information piece, right?
Right, right. So we had mentioned in the introduction that, did you want to add something else?
No, I was just going to say, you know, the gap year, I think it scares so many people into just, you know, heading to college to do something, you know, it's because everybody wants to say that they're going somewhere. And I would say that's another thing I really struggle with, you know, when college or when high school graduation is coming up here. And the question that everybody asks is, where are you going? Mm-hmm. Right? Like insinuating you have to leave to be successful, right, which is awful. But then also, if you're not leaving, like you instantly frame it, and that student instantly understands that if they're not going anywhere, that's a failure. Like that's not right. Mm-hmm. So my plea to everybody is not necessarily asking, where are you going? You know, ask, what do you want to be? Which is way more important than where you're going. You know, if you're a dentist in Fargo versus a dentist in Detroit Lakes, like, does it really matter?
Yeah.
Aren't you still successful at your dentist? You're doing what you want to do?
Right. Well, and you know, this episode's airing at the end of the spring. So those questions will be coming if they haven't already. So that's great advice. We had mentioned too in the beginning how you work around employment trends. And I'm curious, how have you seen school districts responding to that employment trends and or those employment trends? And, you know, what's kind of changed as far as, you know, where students might be pushed? We already talked a little bit about pushing everybody into a bachelor's degree or 4-year, or what kind of tracks they might take. How has that shifted from 10 to 15 years ago? And then also, I'm stacking questions here, but we can take them one at a time. You know, what might it look like 20 years out?
Yeah, so it's been fascinating because I got into this position and, you know, really have been in these data since, you know, like 2014, that really 2013, like the end of the Great Recession. That was really actually kind of like my prime job searching time was the Great Recession, which was awful. And in that period, I mean, even my own experience, I went to college because I couldn't get a job when I got out of the military. It was not a good time to be looking, to be honest. And you can look back at, like, say, college enrollment, and it runs countercyclical of the business cycle. And we see it in our job vacancy survey when we survey businesses and ask them, you know, what type of openings they have. We ask what type of education they want for their openings and things like that. And education for many occupations, particularly outside of your licensed occupations, you know, like where, you know, to be an RN in Minnesota, you have to have a 2-year degree. They're not going to drop that, right? Because can't get licensed. But all, you know, the vast majority of occupations are not licensed. They don't have this educational requirement attached to it. And employers use that education as a filtering mechanism. So during the Great Recession, when you had this surplus of labor, they ratcheted up educational requirements in an effort to kind of filter through this huge abundance of applicants, right? Because they were just getting overloaded.
Yep.
So the labor market started to tighten. You know, I would say like in 2015, that's when I really started hearing about it, seeing it. And then in that run up, you know, between 2015 and 2020, it just got tighter and tighter. And enrollment in college started shifting. It started declining. And, you know, it's kind of hard to make the correlation. I mean, it's hard to say it's causal, but it's definitely correlated because it's at the same time where employers were loosening their education requirements. Mm-hmm. You know, when an employer would call me and say, you know, we can't find any applicants, that's one of the first things I would do is ask them, yeah, have you visited your educational requirements? Because that's like a free thing to change that opens up your available labor pool. And then we had this huge exodus of our labor force in 2020. And we talked about a tight labor market in 2019. It is almost laughable compared to what we ended up with in the end of 2020 and 2021, 22, 23, 24. All those, you know, people left the labor force. You know, in Minnesota, we were down, you know, like 150,000 people at one point.
Wow.
You know, just gone. We still have fewer workers now than we did pre-pandemic, by the way.
Where'd
they fewer
go?
Workers. They retired.
Okay.
They were mainly 55 plus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. That's kind of like the biggest contributor. So, but like, they left a vacuum and that is creating huge amounts of opportunities for students to get really good jobs without higher education. And businesses, they're taking the initiative. They know that, we need to be a part of the solution. So they're doing, a lot of them are shifting to their own type of training, bringing in outside consultants, taking people in that maybe necessarily they wouldn't have considered before, but now they think, you know, let's groom them and grow them.
Okay.
And that's shifting it. You know, the vast majority of our jobs don't actually require higher education anyways. So it's not necessarily, it doesn't worry me from the perspective of, oh no, we won't have enough college educated people to fill our job openings.
Mm.
We kind of already create a surplus of that. So that really is not a worry, at least looking at the data. So, you know, from that perspective, my thought is always then, like, this is kind of where it gets back to educators. You know, at any given school district and basically anywhere, you got somewhere between 20 and 30% probably of your graduates that aren't going into higher education. And my question is, what are we doing for them?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
The high school, which provides the best value in education, like bar none, it is just a tremendous value for participants because it opens, it just really unlocks the economy and opportunities. At a pretty low price compared to other education. And obviously, you typically don't have to pay for it as a student immediately. But if that's the last place, this is the last educational institutional stop on your train to your careerhood, what are you equipped to do, right? In schools, and this is also why I really love this work, is because I actually get to be involved with school districts who actually can make changes relatively quickly. There's not a lot of bureaucracy. And you can kind of take charge and reshape your school. And I've seen it happen really quickly. It's not like what we see, you know, in upper levels of government where things just take more time and there's more layers and more decision makers.
Yeah. So, I'm thinking some of our, you know, one of our programmings here at Sourcewell is around career pathways. And there's lots of talk around, I mentioned certificates before too, but can we have students graduating with a certificate in their hand ready to, you know, go into the workforce with something that they're interested
uh-huh.
in and start making some money as a part of their pre-K-12 educational experience, whether that's culinary arts or that's a CDL license or, you know, some kind of certificate around welding. I don't know. I'm just throwing out different ideas, you know,
yep.
some trades or some things where we can have, you know, students with some certification or training in hand that matches what we're seeing in the workforce trends and the employment trends and avoid some of those financial pitfalls that, you know,
yeah,
maybe some of the other of us, I'm in that boat. Some of us were not as fortunate to avoid.
Right. And, you know, and this is where it kind of gets under the policy side and higher education side too, is, you know, like take early childhood, for instance, you know, not real great wages out of these programs in higher education,
mm-hmm.
but it's not for lack of demand.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. and the right decision wouldn't be, oh, you know, you're not going to make good money, so let's close this program down. Right. I mean, that's not good. Same with the licensed social workers. There's a lot of examples where there's just market failures. We need these people. Our communities and our economy rely on them. Unfortunately, there's just not a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
So then, you know, like that's where I think like what you're talking about is perfect. So if we can't necessarily just make them get paid more, can we decrease their cost to enter it? Can you get these early childhood certificates in high school, mm-hmm. you know, follow your passion, like, and not have that cost burden? You know, these are kind of like the programming things that I like to help people think through is, Is this missing in your community, in your school district? Is there a way to actually help more people achieve this as a career and be more successful financially too? It's just hard to put a limit to all the things that can be done with this type of information.
So I feel like this whole podcast episode has been one big giant piece of advice. But yeah. Any other last pieces of advice that you would have for educators or our students, their families, caregivers, as they're thinking about life after that pre-K-12 school system?
For students, I would say ask questions, be as curious as possible, and ask the people doing the job that you want to do. And if you have no idea what you want to do, you know, we have tools on our website. You can pick even career clusters, but see what jobs are in demand. You know, that's going to give you an easier time to enter those occupations. They might overlook barriers if you have them. You know, maybe you don't have a car, transportation, or you don't want to pursue the education that people typically have. Well, if employers are struggling to hire it, then it can be done without that education. They're going to be more willing to move on that. So that would be my advice to students. Just ask lots of questions and use this information. Obviously, you shouldn't be researching your next phone more than your whole career, right? But that might be the case.
That's good advice. I will make sure to put links on our show notes to some of those tools that you just mentioned so that students can find them.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You know, and for teachers, you know, my big advice is try not to underestimate how influential you are and how the way you talk about your community, your own job, just opportunities in general, how that can stick with students and really shape what they end up doing, right? And that's important. Think of education in general. You know, we don't have an abundance of teachers.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure your listeners know that more than most.
Mm-hmm.
Do we talk positively about our careers as teachers? Mm-hmm. Are we helping or hurting? You know, because I have lots of data points that show how influential teachers are. And because they're so influential, I unfortunately think it's that much more important that teachers have this information to actually give insightful advice, not necessarily just, you know, really general advice. It's a challenge. And again, I'm not a teacher, so I don't want to should on anybody, and you should do this and you should do that. But
yeah,
there's not enough time in the day for it all. But,
luckily
if there's anything we can do. Yeah, that's I wouldn't say I've done all the work, but we're trying to make it easier, and I am open to suggestions.
You have gathered the information that we can pass along and use in our instructional plans.
Yes.
All right. Last question for you. And any other resources that you think would be helpful, please pass them along to me, and I will make sure to add those to our show notes and get those links so people can find them and use them easily. And then in addition to that, what do you enjoy reading, watching, or listening to that you would recommend? And I always say it could be, you know, related to our topic. Maybe it's, you know, you just love reading analytical data. You like to share some peer-reviewed journals and research articles, or it could be just for fun.
I watch what I'm watching right now. My wife and I are rewatching The Office because it's one of the best TV shows ever.
Never gets old.
There's always something I catch on it. It's funny because if you look through it through the eyes of an economist, there's economics in every single episode.
Oh, sure.
Listening, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and, I always like to listen to, you know, Planet Money and The Indicator from NPR, but also, Freakonomics, and there's just a lot of good ones out there.
Well, I will make sure to link those so that others that are interested can check that out as well. And like I said at the beginning, if this sparked more questions for you, or you are curious and have things that you want to ask, make sure that you get yourself registered for our Sourceful Educator Summit so you can come and meet Luke in person and have some of those conversations and questions with him as he continues to share even more during some breakout sessions this August. So thank you, Luke. Appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Hey, soulmates. Samantha here, editor of EdSoul. After the episode wrapped, there continued to be some great dialogue, and we thought it should be included. The additional voice you will hear is Jeremy Doyle, our marketing multimedia manager, who is in studio with Rachel. We hope you enjoy this bonus content.
I have so many questions I am not going to ask, but I have a ton of questions.
I was like, I could feel it. Jeremy's wife is a counselor, a high school counselor.
My wife is a counselor, and my daughter is a junior in high school.
Oh my gosh.
So we've been having these conversations because she wants to get out of Minnesota. And we are like, fine, you can go to Minnesota. What schools are you looking at? What is that going to be? What do you want to do with your life? Well, I like Spanish, so I'm going to work that in there. Well, what are you going to do with that? And she wants to go to the East Coast, and she found some school in Baltimore. And we're like, oh, that's cool. Like, how much does that run? It says like $53,000. I'm like, oh, that's really nice. Does that include room and tuition? No, that's another $20,000. I'm like, okay, so you're talking like, you know, $350,000, $400,000 to get out there. You don't know what you want to do. Like, we're going to have some serious conversations about this because your parents, unfortunately, do well enough where you're not going to get help and don't do well enough where we're going to be able to pay for it.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Good luck to you.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You fall in the majority of most people, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just have so many questions based on all of it. Like, you know, how does this apply to rural Minnesota when you're not exposed to different careers that you'd have? And then, of course, there's always the talk of, you know, our students today, you know, 50% of the jobs they're going to be doing don't exist today. So how do you follow up with that and trend and learn? I
hate it when people say that. That's my advice. Never say that.
Oh, we should have had that in there. Why? Say more.
It's just not useful. Like, what are you going to do with that information?
To say that so that's part of it. Okay. That 50% of the jobs don't exist.
And I hear like, I'll hear futurists and it'll be like 80% of the jobs that, you know, kindergartners will have don't even exist yet. And it's just not true also. I mean, that's kind of the big one. So I am not like I'm not a futurist. I would love to be because they make mad money and they, you know, whenever you're proved wrong, you're dead by then anyways, right? I mean, you just can make up whatever you want to. But, you know, like, so we produce the employment projections, you know, and we occasionally will do analysis to see, you know, what did we project and what actually happened. And, and the economy moved very, very quickly in 2020. Like, it shifted crazy. But that was mainly just your work environment. I mean, even the types of jobs we have, they really haven't shifted. Right? And so to be honest, like, technology changes things. It changes how you do your job, but it doesn't necessarily change what you're accomplishing, right? I mean, so if you went from using a typewriter to a desktop computer, like, huge shift. It requires different types of skills. But what you're accomplishing is still the same. And would a person that transitioned there, would they say, I'm in a different occupation now? Like, no. I mean, so my best advice would be, and I always tell people, like, the jobs that are in demand now, like, they're going to be in demand in 10 years. You just don't even change that fast. Like, right now, if you look at the two occupations that are expected to have the most amount of openings over the next 10 years, any guesses?
YouTube influencer.
Yeah, they're not fun and sexy. Nope. They're fast food workers and cashiers. Because it's a huge occupation. And like cashiers, for instance, like, we do project a negative net loss on those. We have, and they have been shrinking, but it just doesn't matter. There's so many of them that like, we'll just still have a huge pile of them in the future. And
so
on the other hand,
automatic checkouts aren't taking jobs away.
Well, no. And I've been reading that they've been going away.
Expanding.
I've been reading that a lot of the automatic checkouts are being taken off because of the shrinkage of material
theft,
shrinkage. They call it shrinkage.
Oh, they call it theft.
But Target's going away from a lot of the bigger stores are starting, like, there was a big influx, but now starting to peel back because of the shrinkage.
They need the people.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the other hand, you know, like, so that's like the most amount of openings, and people, you know, I see this in government programs and education everywhere, but like for projections and using, thinking about like future needs, there's almost always a huge emphasis on growth, like percent change growth, without any leveling of the actual raw numbers themselves. So our fastest growing occupation in the country in Minnesota is projected to be wind turbine technicians. Like right now, there's like 200 of those jobs in the whole state.
Mm.
Right? So that occupation can grow 50%. And that's only going to mean there's going to be 300 instead of 200 in a decade, you know?
I'm sorry, the lights just went out in here.
I just saw that.
I think Mitch just shut down the studio.
Okay. That must be the cue, huh?
Those lights should not go all the way off.
That's never happened to me. Oh, well, hope maybe we got some bonus footage there. Thank you for your questions, Jeremy, and thank you for your answers, because we're still recording.
Yeah, so feel free to use it.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I'll be honest. Our manager, Cameron, he's got, you know, kids in college, and, you know, they're older than my kids. And so he's gone through this of being in this, trying to help the whole, you know, his whole life, basically in this, just in the weeds. You know, and he's told me, he's like, yeah, he's like, it's just doesn't work out when you try to, you know, have these conversations with your kids. It's just like, he didn't even know anything, you know, I mean, it's not like he didn't know anything, but like, it's so difficult because what kids are interested in isn't necessarily what he's trying to tell them about.
Right. Yeah.
And that to me is always like, all right, there's room to improve.
Yeah. I'm just thinking like, I had no clue until I graduated, until my parents were like, here you go. Here's your debt. And I was like, huh?
Yeah.
Because all I knew was like, they explained it to me, but I don't even know if this is like how it broke down, but it was like 1/3 scholarships, 1/3 us, 1/3 you, and then whatever. But I had no clue the whole way through. I was just completely clueless, and it was just like, here you go. And I was like, ah. But I mean, like, would have been nice to think about, because I went to a private college, so it cost more money.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm of the age of college is what you did after high school. So for me, when you say college is not set up for career exploration, that would be a false statement in my case.
Because that's what you did.
That's what liberal arts schools are for, right?
Yeah. It's interesting. It's frustrating and interesting all at the same time. And then, you know, there's a lot of different parties with different interests too, you know, working with higher education, you know, and they're trying to increase enrollment. Employers are trying to decrease the amount of time people are in college. Students don't want to be spending as much money, you know, so it helps that I don't really have skin in the game. You know, I don't have an agenda aside from helping students make the best possible decision, because it's just a bummer when I see students make not necessarily the wrong decision, but like, you know, based on unfounded fears or I can't tell you how many classrooms. I remember there was one girl one time, and I've talked to thousands and thousands of students, who told me in the majority of women in basically every general class that in any general class that I'm talking to, like the biggest group of them that are interested in any one thing, it's to be a nurse, right? Phenomenal money, things like that. And I always ask 2-year or 4-year. And I've had one girl in over a decade that said 2-year. And none of them have ever, aside from that one, have said that they wanted to do a 2-year degree. And when I ask why, like, they just, I can see them all, like, they're very confident 4-year. And then when I ask why, like, no one's ever asked them that before, I can tell.
Sounds better.
Yeah. They're like, well, you get a better job, you make more money. I was like, how do you know that? I don't know. And I was like, well, let's take a look. Like, we actually have data. You can compare a 2-year RN and a 4-year RN from the same graduating year out of Minnesota colleges. And you can see, like, are they employed at higher rates? Do they make more money? You know?
Yeah.
It's just.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. I wish the absolute best of luck with Your student, do you have more than one that's coming through the pipe?
Yeah, yeah. My daughter's my oldest. She's a junior. They're 15 months apart, but 2 years apart in school. So I have a junior and a freshman. My freshman is not nearly as adventurous, and I would see him probably over in Duluth just because he loves Duluth and they have lots of programs. And my daughter just really wants to get out of Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, if that was my kid and they wanted to go to college to see the world or, you know, to experience it, my advice, and I tell you, and I think it upsets people to be honest. But I always tell them like, you know, I guess weigh out your options. Is it better to become more cultured and worldly by hearing it from a professor, or is it to actually go to those cultures and interact with them and travel the world yourself? Because if you, you know, blow your cash and your, you know, kind of what you can use in higher education, you might never get to go see those places. Or, you know, I guess there's more than one way to gain that experience. You know, it's going to be different for every person. And if she really wants to experience the East Coast, it's my wife's favorite place, by the way. So I get it. I love New England. I can't, being there does not compare to, you know, hearing about it. And even if you're there hearing about it, like maybe you could scratch that itch with a trip.
Oh, she's done plenty of trips. I don't think it's going to scratch her itch. It just makes her want to go on more trips.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah. Well,
stay tuned. Maybe you guys can connect in August and see what's...
Oh, I'm going to track you down in August.
Yeah. You can blame me for all the problems then, too.
But at least now I have this nice report to go find and say, hey, look at this. Mm-hmm. Make a good decision.
Yeah.
And then my wife will say, that money is for school. And I'll say, well, it's her money. But she can't access it till she's old, so...
Oh, that's my kids are little, like they're 8, 6, and 2. And my oldest, when he wants something, he'll be like, don't you have an account for me? Like we have a 529C or whatever. And he's like, can't you pull it out of there? Like that is not what this is for.
Well, I will tell you that thanks to Granny, the kids probably have more money than I have.
Oh, thank you, Granny.
That's helpful.
That's nice. Okay. Well, thank you, Luke. We appreciate it. And we'll see you this summer because we'll both be there. Right?
Awesome. Yeah. Track me down.
Okay.
I'll be one wandering around looking like I'm lost, I'm sure.
We'll help you out.
Perfect.
Okay.
Have a good summer.
Thanks. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's all we have for this episode of EdSoul, a podcast for educators by educators. If you are loving the show, make sure you share it with a friend. Your personal recommendations are powerful. And if you really love this show, we would love it if you could rate and review us within your preferred podcast app. Your ratings and reviews will help other people discover the show and benefit from these great strategies as well. Check out our show notes for a recap of this episode and a list of resources mentioned or referenced. If you're a social media type, connect with us on Facebook. Search Education Solutions Educators Group and request to join. If you're an e-newsletter type, you should subscribe to our education e-newsletter by emailing us at education@sourcewell-mn.gov. The e-newsletter goes out monthly and includes updates and events for our local educators. Special thanks to our Sourcewell Education Solutions Office Support Team and Multimedia for your production support. This podcast is brought to you by Sourcewell. Sourcewell is one of 9 service cooperatives in Minnesota. We are a self-sustaining government organization that partners with schools, local government, and nonprofits to boost student and community success. Learn more at mn.sourcewell.org.